The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 20th of March, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Paul Griffith, Chief Executive Officer of Predator Oil and Gas. PRD is ticker there. And Paul discusses the award of an exclusive exploration license for onshore Morocco. Also on the podcast, Robert Price, Executive Chairman and CEO of Highlands Natural Resources. HNR is ticker there. And Robert explains their move to establish an organic, vertically integrated cannabis operation in Colorado. Also on the podcast, John Quinlan, Chief Executive Officer of Iconic Labs, which is still known as Wide Cells Group at the moment, WGC, but is soon to be renamed. And John explains their new media and technology business model. And as always, as it's a Wednesday, I have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Strategic Minerals, Blue Jay Mining, and TriStar Resources. Plus, I have two lists for you. Top fives, most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see a raft of other content.
To receive free company updates straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever a company you follow releases significant news, download the free Vox Markets app from voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Griffiths, Chief Executive Officer of Predator Oil and Gas. PRD is a ticker. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Now, you announced yesterday that you signed your agreement offshore Morocco, that is, I should say. And you mentioned that it was going all guns, going quite well. You were progressing this, and it hasn't been a lot of time at all. We'll get into the detail in a bit. Before we do, as always, rather than just highlight this, there's other parts of the business. So summarise Predator Oil and Gas, Paul, if you could.
Okay, very quickly, because most people have heard this before. We operate in Trinidad, Morocco, and Ireland. We're partners with state oil companies Heritage in Trinidad and Onheim now in Morocco. And we're focused on H1 production in Trinidad, drilling in Morocco in 2019, and M&A activity in Ireland centered on gas and infrastructure.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, well, take us through the details of this license then that you've signed in Morocco, Paul, if you could.
Okay, well, the good news, obviously, for our shareholders is we formally signed the license yesterday and announced it yesterday. We announced it yesterday because Onheim put it on their website pretty much the same time, so we had to announce it yesterday. That's positive, obviously, that they're supporting this whole project. We negotiated this and signed a lease in less than 6 months, and I think most people believe that that's a pretty good record considering how long it takes in other parts of the world. We're targeting gas next to the infrastructure represented by the Maghreb gas pipeline. The commercial model for gas is proven in this part of Morocco because the Rab Basin, which people know from STX Energy, lies right next door to us in Guercif. The gas is proven on the license, and the Rab analog for gas exploration development is well understood in Rab, but untested, completely untested by drilling in Guercif. So therein lies the attraction for us in the Guercif license. So the difference here compared to the Rab Basin is that we have giant potential gas play based on a new independently identified reservoir that was not discovered, but that was investigated by academics a couple of years ago from outcrop data and published. And that translates into our seismic amplitude anomalies that we see deeper in the basin. So that's something new that hasn't been recorded before in Morocco, and that's what gives the great potential that we see in Guercif for big resources. Early drilling is completely achievable. By being partners with Onheim, they assist us in accessing rigs and in the environmental impact studies, for example, which is a breath of fresh air compared to operating in some areas of Europe, for example. Mm-hmm. And the last point I probably make, which I feel I need to make, is that management has a track record in Morocco. We identified Tendrara as a potential large gas play. We did all the initial reservoir engineering work and provided the catalyst for Sound Energy to come along later, drill the wells, prove up the gas. So when we talk about big gas in Morocco, I believe we can talk as a management team with authority because we've been there, done it before, but this time we're going to deliver for our shareholders and not for someone else's shareholders.
Yeah. So as far as, you know, getting it done, you say it can be done in this year. So you're looking for a rig now, long lead items, you're quite confident it can be done this year, yeah?
Yeah, certainly rigs are not an issue. Environmental impact study is not an issue. That's a tried and trusted process. The only thing we've got outstanding at present is a long lead item on the wellhead, but the wellhead is not too different from what SDX use in the Rab Basin, so we believe that's not a serious long-term lead item. So it can all be done. It'll be challenging to get it all put together as quickly as we want to put it together, but eminently achievable. And remember, this is a 10 to 15 day well, $2 million well. So, you know, we're not looking at a very complicated drilling program. The site's perfect. You can drill all year round, easy logistical asset access. So there's no reason why we can't advance drilling in the time frame what we're looking at.
Yeah. And do you know Paul from SDX Energy?
I have met him before when he was at Chariot Oil and Gas.
Okay, so, he's often on the podcast. So if you want an introduction, let me know. We can get you in contact.
I'll put the message out to him now. We will be contacting him in London when we get back, because we do think there's some synergies here in terms of rig sharing, and so does Onim for that matter. But it may not be possible to share a rig with SDX because they're a pretty aggressive and an impressive drilling program as well themselves. So. But it all makes sense to try and cooperate on rigs, etc. It's win-win for all parties, you know.
Absolutely. Okay, last thing then, Paul. Three reasons why someone listening who's not following you should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, you didn't ask me about Ireland, so I just wanted to give a slight update on Ireland, if I might. We've put our focus in on M&A activity, and we've ramped that up over the last couple of months. And we're sort of developing a very ambitious plan for gas in Ireland to address security of gas supply and reducing CO2 emissions. No one in Ireland, in my view, can doubt our credibility predator to deliver. We're doing that in Trinidad, supported by the government of Trinidad, and we're now doing that in Morocco, supported by the government of Morocco. And now it's Ireland's turn to deliver and continue. Or if they continue along this path, they're risking security of gas supply and big fines from the EU for failing miserably to meet CO2 emission targets. Mm-hmm. And for those fines, the taxpayer comes up with the money to pay those fines. So what we want to see is action on Ireland, effectively, to push ahead with the plans to drill and appraise and develop gas in Ireland, because we think that's in everyone's interest. So we're like a number of companies frustrated by the rate of progress in Ireland. Yeah. I just want to make it clear to our shareholders that we're doing our bit to exert as much pressure as we can as a small company in Ireland to address this issue of delays.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm sure Ireland could be one of your three reasons, but go for it. What's the three reasons, Paul?
So the three reasons, the first reason is H1 production in Trinidad, which provides cash flow, and we're looking at improving oil prices now. West Texas prices are around about $59 a barrel today. Second reason, as I've said before, is the potential of a ramp-up production in Trinidad on CO2 EOR, now with the agreement, consent of Heritage for the first CO2 EOR project. And then the third reason, obviously, is a transformational drilling opportunity in Morocco. And I'll leave you with one question for your podcast audience. Mm-hmm. Ask yourself why management own greater than 50% of this company, and show me any other listed small cap or mid cap company where management is similarly committed and backing its projects to the hilt. I can't find one, but maybe they can come up with a few for me.
No, it's a good question. Well, do you know what? Over 50%, I can't think of it. I can think of a few close. Not many, though. You'd be surprised. And that's, you know, and that's why I'm encouraged by management owning stock. Of course, it aligns you with the
investors. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's an important selling point because we align ourselves with shareholders on that basis. And we wouldn't be doing this unless we thought there was big potential in these assets.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Yesterday, Paul, someone gave me an idea. I always get some people posting ideas to me on Twitter or something, and I just looked at this. First of all, I quite like the product is a tech company, and I looked straight away at the shareholder register, and literally, the management, the board, had less than, I think, 2% altogether, you know? And I said, listen, I don't like that. I mean, you know, you'll find when they own a lot, they care about shareholders because they are one. And they also exactly, that's it.
I think for the avoidance of doubt, I'm not criticising any management or any company where the ownership is a lot less than ours. All I'm saying is our ownership reflects our strength in the belief of our assets and where we want to go with these assets.
Yeah.
And that, for me, is a big marker to put down to the market out there. We're putting our money and our time and our effort where our mouth is.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody also, Paul, listen, operationally, you know, you're behind it. And also, even when it comes down to funding and all that, you always have, you know, shareholders' thoughts at heart because you are one, and that's it. And that, you know, it goes
absolutely. And I think from a shareholder's point of view, an external shareholder's point of view, they should take heart from the fact that we will find, you know, the optimal way to fund our progress that doesn't result in extreme dilution or any kind of major dilution for shareholders, because we'll be shooting ourselves in the foot by doing that. So rest assured, we will find the innovative ways and the mixture of ways to fund and develop our projects. But we have to move our projects forward at all times, because that's the way we deliver value. And it's in the first couple of years of a company, a startup company like ours, that you have to create the value. If you leave it too long, you find the value being eroded constantly, and it's downhill from that point onwards. So that's why we're advancing Morocco. We see, you know, the opportunity to make a big return for shareholders in the very, very short term.
Marvellous stuff, Paul. Good to chat to you. No doubt we'll catch up again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks a lot.
We will. Thanks very much for this opportunity. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Robert Price, Executive Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of Highlands Natural Resources. HNR is the ticker. Robert, thanks for joining me.
Justin, thanks for having me today. It's always a pleasure to be with you on Vox Markets.
Yeah, and some exciting news here, adding another string to your bow there. And in fact, you know, before we get into this news, which is in a hot sector, take us through a couple of strings in the bow of Highlands Natural Resources and summarize the company, if you could, Robert.
Well, Justin, we are bringing back wells, flowing them back, 8 wells where Highlands has a 7.5% carried interest on these wells. The wells are doing very well, and we're generating sufficient cash flow to cover all our overhead. But the most important and most exciting thing recently is our Kansas gas discovery. It's in Kansas, and we discovered this well that will produce 2,500 MCF of gas a day. But it's not methane, Justin. It's actually nitrogen along with hydrogen.
Very interesting. Okay, well listen, and you at the moment you're fundraising. This is a bit of news. It's quite exciting and unexpected. You're fundraising to establish an organic sort of cannabis operation. Is that right? So take us through this. What's happening and why are you doing this?
Yeah, Justin. So with our hydrogen nitrogen gas mix, the question was, we wanted to make the most of our gas. And so our gas is a organic fertilizer. And so we went to probably one of the most valuable crops in the world, and that is cannabis. And we tried this experiment of our natural fertilizer, and we increased the yield on the cannabis plants by 30%. And so that is truly extraordinary. And Justin, let me just share a little bit about the challenges when you have a operation, whether it's cannabis or whether it's hemp. The challenge is when you're organic, you suffer from yields. The people that don't suffer from yields, they put chemical-based fertilizers and pesticides on the plants. Well, our intention with forming a wholly owned subsidiary of Highlands called Zoetic Organics, is to have a true organic product, and we will begin producing hemp at a state-of-the-art facility in Colorado. And so we're real excited about being able to have a more of a level playing field with those people that are putting chemical-based fertilizers and pesticides. Our process will be all organic, and our gas is considered organic compliant. And we can increase the plant growth through organics by 30%.
Wow. And you're hoping to get this up and running quite quickly, because you're saying you're expecting first revenues by mid-2019, mid this year, and hopefully profitability by the end of the year. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely, Justin. We have signed a lease on a state-of-the-art facility. It's 33,000 square foot facility on 53 acres in western Colorado. We will begin the operations of growing hemp. And let me be really clear about hemp. In the United States Congress passed the 2018 Farm Bill, which legalized hemp operations throughout the United States. So what we're doing is fully legal, and CBD oils that we'll be making have been widely accepted throughout the United States and, in fact, throughout the world. And so we'll begin our operations on April 1st, and looking for the first harvests in the near future towards the summer. And then we'll have outgrow operations that we'll be harvesting in the fall.
Wow. You've got some figures here. The CBD market is growing quickly, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's all because of the Farm Bill that it really exploded the market. Just in the United States, over the next 3 years, it'll be a $22 billion a year business. Truly incredible. And Highlands will distinguish itself by producing only premium organic products.
Yeah, well, this is how did you get to know about this? How did you start this? Where did the idea come from?
Well, we've been experimenting with this, and from an organic standpoint, again, we did not want to use any chemicals in the process. And so we are very fortunate to be able to discover this hydrogen-nitrogen mix. But I'm also pleased to announce, Justin, that we have hired a management team that has experience in the cannabis industry in Colorado over many years. And they will be joining us as they build the Zoetic brand, and they have the experience with the growing operation. So we're really pleased to have the new management team work hand in hand with us here at Highlands.
Marvelous stuff. And as far as this is concerned, obviously you've got lots of other things going on, but as far as this part of the business is concerned, what's the next kind of big milestone you're hoping to achieve then, Robert?
Well, we'll have a many different products line of CBD. Mm-hmm. And Justin, we have two main revenue sources. One will be selling into the wholesale markets, and one will be selling into the retail markets. Our first product launches will be in smokables. So they're called blunts, pretty much cigarettes, but they're CBD cigarettes. The other will be a chew pack. Where it's like chewing tobacco, but it's a pack, a CBD chew. We'll also have the tincture bottles. We'll have liquid gels and creams and so forth as we expand our base. So we're excited not only from the wholesale standpoint, but to start expanding our brand in the retail. And the management team that we've brought on, they're experienced in building these brands at a very fast pace. So we're real confident about the future of Highlands, Zoetic Organic, as we lead together with our team.
Marvelous stuff. Okay. Well, one final thing to do, Robert, before you say goodbye, that's if people are listening to this right now, like the progress you're making here and this entry into this market, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, first of all, Justin, the wells in Colorado that are oil and natural gas, the initial potential of those wells are over 4,500 barrels of oil equivalent a day. Highlands has a carried interest on those. And so we're producing some real good revenue on those wells, first of all. Mm-hmm. But back to Kansas. Two other reasons to try to follow Highlands is making the best of the gas we have. We're going to be able to use this as a competitive advantage in the hemp CBD industry, but also we will be able to sell the gas to other producers of these type of products. So we're commercializing our gas fast, and we're taking advantage of the additional margins that the CBD industry will create for us.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Robert, it's good to chat to you. And like I say, lots of things going on there across the portfolio. So no doubt we'll be catching up again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Justin, thank you. Have a great day.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Quinlan, Chief Executive Officer of Wide Sales Group, that's WDC, soon to be changed in name-wise and sort of business-wise as well, to Iconic Labs. John, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. Now, I've seen you mention quite a bit. There's a bit of buzz on social media, and I know the stock has rallied quite strongly since the change and the restructuring and all that, and the name change, or proposed name change. So I suppose we're going to say Iconic Labs. What's it all about?
Yes, so Iconic Labs is a media and technology business. We've got a unique experience and expertise in social media, content and technology. And we use that, we work with brands on marketing and content for those clients. But we also plan to use those same skills to create our own technology, our own intellectual property, so we can take advantage of the structural shifts we see in the market.
Yeah, and you used to, I mean, people will know you from your former vehicle, which is Unilad, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
I've seen, you know, Unilad is one of those things that I'm sure everyone has seen a video, a bit of content from you on the internet somewhere, you know, and without actually questioning what's behind it, who's behind it, or how do you make money. So tell us what Unilad was, and tell us how you got so influential on social media, and what basically what you have to do with Iconic Labs. But let's start with Unilad, because some people may not have heard of it at all. So explain Unilad, if you could, first.
Yes. So Unilad was the biggest social media publisher in the world. We reached about 500 million people a month, which is, you know, to put it into context, that's more than Snapchat. That's more than Twitter. We started it. It was very much a sort of you're starting in the bedrooms type of thing with a couple of £100. We never took any investment and we grew it just by sort of skill and good decisions, I guess, on social media in particular, and that's where most people see it. In terms of making money, we made a lot of money through advertising, you know, and that was our main source of revenue. We got the revenues to over 10 million a year by last year.
Yeah. So how did you start? You said in a bedroom, 200 quid or something. You started over.
Yeah.
So who is it then? Who started it, and what? How did that go? How did you know what to do?
Yeah. So there's a couple of different people, and a couple of him were in the Iconic Labs. So Liam was one of the people, Liam Harrington and myself being part of the team. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, we were making content for ourselves first and foremost, and it became a business, and it. As an aside after that, so it was very much a product first and content first focused for us. But it was but it soon became a very very lucrative business because brands came up to us and said, "We want what you're doing right now. We want that for ourselves." So you know that same sort of expertise and experience is something that we pioneered in the industry, and we're still doing it now, you know. So yeah, no, really looking forward to as we bring those skills into Iconic Labs.
Yeah, so explain the kind of content you did produce at Unilad then. What kind of stuff was it that you know, got so much attention?
Yeah, so we did a mixture of things. So we were sort of world leaders in acquiring licensed content from users. So, you know, if a video is taken by someone, just a random person on the street, we would find that person, pay that person, license that clip for ourselves. So we were able to reach a lot of scale with clips like that. Mm-hmm. But we also had an in-house video team creating sort of more premium content, I would say, which, you know, wouldn't look out of place on television. So we were doing both of those type of models of creating content, and both were really effective. And, you know, in terms of how you use social media platforms, each different platform, you need to have a different strategy for each one. Like YouTube is very different from Facebook, which is very, very different from Snapchat and TikTok, etc. So it's horses for courses on that one. Mm-hmm. And you've got to have both of those tactics.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's talk about Iconic Labs then. I mean, you know, obviously there's EGM hoping to change the name from Wide Cells. So what are you going to do there? Is it the same kind of thing?
So I think, you know, we've had time to reflect on our time from Unilad. And look, while it worked really, really well, you know, as we look back, there are some things that we would do slightly different and improve on. Mm-hmm. But also, I think the market has changed as well. So I think from our point of view, there's a huge opportunity in having something that's multi-platform, so based on all social media networks, whereas we were more focused on Facebook at Unilad. Yeah. So I think that there'll be some parts of the same. Like, we're still the best at you know, making stuff go viral was one of the things people used to say to us all the time. So we're still the best at that. Making online content, yes, but I also think there'll be a bigger focus on creating premium content. I think there'll be a bigger focus on becoming, you know, offering a consultancy approach and an agency approach to brands. Okay. And then finally, I think we'll also be developing technological sort of tech products that take advantage of the structural changes we see in the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so, how do you know? I mean, when you're putting content out there, like you say, everyone wants to go viral. Every company, yeah, every ad, everything. But knowing what that magic thing is that makes it go viral, how do you figure that out?
Yeah, so it's a mixture between expertise, experience, you know, it's having the right team, but also and technology and how to use it. And I think that's what we were very good at, is that we built technology for our own needs and for the problems that we identified. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're ever going to say to someone, and I think probably, you know, our clients have heard it from other people, that, you know, this piece of technology is going to solve all your problems. It's not. You need to combine the team and their insights with the technology. And that's something that we were really, really good at. So yeah, that for us, it's not a, we managed to turn that whole process of making content, getting a lot of people to watch that content into a science, into a process. You know, we tried very, very hard to make it look like we didn't try very hard. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on beneath the surface at Unilad. And this is something that we obviously know about, and those systems and the technology we want to build better at Iconic Labs.
Yeah, well, exactly. And like you say, it's an expertise that lots of brands also want a part of. So you've got that, you know, consultancy side as well. So, So what's the next sort of big milestone, next bit of news you're hoping to achieve, or you know, what to tick off the list there then, John?
Yeah, well, we've got some, you know, we've obviously got a lot of experience and contacts in this area in regards to brands and organizations that might have worked with before, or who have asked us to work with. So there are some people that we're speaking to. Mm-hmm. And that's really exciting. We've also been inundated with requests from small and medium-sized players to partner up in some way, whether that be, you know, them becoming part of Iconic Labs. That's something we're looking at. And that goes for agencies, consultants, content providers, and technology products. So there's a lot of interesting stuff to come here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You say the landscape has changed a bit, and it's often hard to replicate, you know, previous success. I mean, how confident are you that you can do better or equal, you know, what you did last time?
Well, look, I think we have got a huge opportunity here. If we look at, you know, we've got access to capital, which we never had at Unilad, and we've got the right structure around us, which we never really had at Unilad. We've got an experienced board and advisors around us. I think that in terms of replicating success, we're not trying to do exactly the same thing because that won't work. Mm-hmm. But what we are trying to do is saying, look, we know a lot of things that we've learned from that business. We have a lot of contacts, and those for us are important because we think they'll provide the short term and, you know, immediate, hopefully, revenues to the business. But also, you know, the structural changes, you know, there has been and continues to be a huge shift in viewing habits away from television to other platforms, growth of other platforms in terms of like TikTok, which no one had really heard of a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So things are always changing. And we've always put ourselves in a position to make the most of those changes. And now we've kind of got the tools with access to capital to do that. So we're very, very confident, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So in summary, if someone's listening to this right now, then John, and likes the sound of your background and what you hope to do here with the new business, but are not following the story yet, give them three quick reasons in summary why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yep. So I think the first one is the team, like genuinely the best in the world at what we do. And, you know, if we managed to achieve what we did with Unilad with the small amount of money we had, imagine what we're going to do with this. Mm-hmm. I think the other reasons are that, you know, the plan, you know, we've got a very... you know, a very well thought out plan to get revenues and cash flow positive in the short term through our consultancy and agency business. But the last point is that, you know, we see some structural changes. We're in a position to take advantage of those through a roll up strategy and through the development of new technology. And, you know, those products might just knock it out of the park.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. John, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Cheers, thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, good form, thank you.
Marvellous stuff, and how is the world of commodities resource companies this week? Is it? I mean, last week there didn't seem much news around. Is there more?
There's definitely more news coming out. I think we'd had a sort of little flurry of news ahead of the conference in Cape Town in February, and some miners have been over at the PDAC conference in Canada, but now there's a bit more happening on the ground and more results coming out as shown in the news flow. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get into. Individual companies, and it was dragging a lot of junior resource companies. Is this delay over this, you know, the China and America, you know, the trade talks? Apparently, it's going to be done now by the end of April, towards the end of April, they reckon, they're meeting next week. But it's putting a bit of delay on it all, isn't it? It's really taking its time, isn't it?
Well, that uncertainty has hit valuations across the sector for some time, and it's been unfortunately helped lower by a lack of liquidity, I think, in markets as a whole, and so that nervousness is never good for the space. But if there is a trade deal signed, then I think we're going to get some new buying coming back in, and that's very nice across a range of commodities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's genuinely the markets in that Brexit, just uncertainty. You know, it's hard work at the moment. You know, it really is hard work, and the market shouldn't be like this. It's been hard work for like quite a few months now. I mean, we've had a little bit of a rally, but you know, it's a little bit of a bounce. But I think I'm talking about, you know, junior microcaps. It's been hard work. So news, what are we looking at, John?
News today, strategic minerals. Well, this was news on Monday, in fact. They've acquired the other 50% of their Redmore project in Cornwall. Mm-hmm. Redmore is a tin tungsten copper project. One part of it appears to be relatively high grade tin. Then there's another area that looks like it's much more tungsten rich, and there's some copper in the mix as well, just to make life more fun for everybody. We don't know if this is going to be a properly economic project yet, so it's still slightly early days. But the grades look good that we've seen so far, and they've got 4.5 million tons of material with sensible grades, 1% tin equivalent, and that's quite nice. So the Board of Strategic Minerals have elected to pay about £1.6 million in cash. So that's not a huge valuation, but it suggests a certain amount of confidence in a world where cash is king. And the joint venture partner that they bought out, I think, was pretty desperate for the money. So that looks quite good. And then if you look a bit further into Strategic Minerals, they have their Lee Creek copper project in Australia. And I've got to say, I'm pretty excited about that because the drilling was good there. The type of copper mineralization, I think, is fairly easy to process. They've got Alan Broom, who's their chairman, who is one of the world's leading metallurgical experts. And I think that project's going to attract an awful lot of very serious interest.
Yeah. Well, copper, like the colour itself, is red hot. In fact, at the moment, the share price has come back a little bit, hasn't it, of late, because of all these Chinese problems, I think. But the fundamentals look strong for copper, don't they?
Yeah, it's always sad to see the share price pull back on one of our clients, but I think that just reflects softness in the market as a whole, and I think this is a pretty interesting company going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Any other news, John, out there?
Blue Jay this morning announced that they, well, in response to media speculation that they weren't doing a fundraising and that they don't need to till at least spring 2020 on their current plans. They've always had plenty of cash in the tin, so they can choose when and if they want to raise more funds. And
I don't know why they would want to raise more money, because they're in discussions with Rio Tinto and other offtake partners, and they simply wouldn't need to do that at this point of time. So it's all very interesting. And Rod McGilray, who's a real leader of men, he's frustrated with the length of time it's taken to produce the pre-feasibility study. And I noticed there's a statement in today's RNS saying that from SRK, the consultants, that the report should be done by the end of April. So I think a degree of frustration that it's taken so long. But sometimes these projects get optimized along the way, and people come up with new plans that hopefully save on the capital and reduce the operating costs. So it's going to be really interesting to see what numbers are revealed in that. Hopefully they will reveal more details. I'm looking forward to the report. So for me, Blue Jay looks very exciting, and let's hope they can conclude a deal with Rio Tinto or Rio's, and maybe some Chinese offtake partners. Who knows? It's all to play for.
Yeah, well, just underline for people not aware of Blue Jay. Just talk about the project they have there. What's it all about?
Well, it's an ilmenite project, which is titanium mineral sand. So the ilmenite is processed into titanium pigments. It's the stuff that makes paint white. It goes into our newspapers. It goes into just about everything that gets used that needs to either have a color or become opaque. And it's a very important sort of chemical process. Also, about 5% of it goes into titanium metal for aircraft and things like that. So that's a relatively small side of it, but it's still a very important commodity globally. And in fact, there's news today that Jim Ratcliffe is spending $700 million on buying a business in the US, which does this. It's a titanium dioxide business. So Ratcliffe is a clever bloke. He knows where to put his money. And I mean, that's why he's worth about $20 billion or pounds today.
Anything else, John, news-wise?
On TriStar, they have agreed, or the partners on the project, the Antimony Roaster project in Oman, have agreed a $35 million working capital facility. they are commissioning their roaster in Oman. It's been taking quite a long time to get that right, and I think hopefully this sorts out the final bit of cash or overhead facility to get that into full production. So we're looking forward to good news there. Crispin Odey and his Odey funds have 72% of the TriStar business. That in itself owns 40% of the project. And I think this should turn out to be relatively good going forwards.
Marvellous stuff. That's the ticker on that is TSTR. Just shy of a 50 million market cap. Marvellous stuff. John, good to chat to you, and no doubt we'll catch up again next week, fella.
Look forward to it.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Rehobold Resources, RBD. At four, Block Energy, BLOE. At three, Highlands Natural Resources. Of course, Robert was on the podcast, HNR. At two, Wide Cells Group. Of course, John was on the podcast, of soon to be renamed to Iconic Labs. And at number one, Bushveld Minerals, BMN, is the most followed. Okay, top five most liked RNSs came from the following companies in the last 24 hours. This is Amerisa Resources, Excise Right of First Refusal, put eight. At four, 88 Energy, Alaska Projects Update. At three, Motive Bio. Motive Bio granted meetings with US FDA. At two, and Paul on the podcast has Predator Oil and Gas Moroccan License Award. And number one, the most liked RNS came from Asia Met Resources. BFS drilling results strengthen the BKM resource. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.